Welcome to Discover Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today is yet another DF4Q episode. DF4Q stands for Discover Film 4 Questions, which are favorite film, underrated film, overrated film, and a lesser-known film you should seek out. There, see how quickly I can do that now? Today, the DF4Q is going to be answered by Miri Stone, who lives in Seattle, was born in New Zealand, spent time in Australia, and came to Film Invasion Los Angeles with her newborn and the film The Hunter. If you want to see The Hunter, just go to discoverfilm.net. It's right there for you to see. In the meantime, let's find out what kind of films inspire this very original filmmaker.
Having to make it only three kills me. But
well, you can push it if you want. You can go longer if you want. But
well, the three I did come up with, I was like, yeah, this works. Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind is one of my favorite all-time romance fantasy films. The reality kind of breaks down as they're realizing what's happening to them inside of that treatment is just, I love it. And again, it's a really wonderful use of largely practical effects and camera perspective and all sorts of stuff like that, with some smattering of the VFX used later to really give it that magical zhuzh. And I love that film. And the heart of the performances is so there. And, you know, before that film, Jim Carrey was just the guy who did all the really crazy comedy. Like, no one knew he had it in him, except these guys.
And
I love her to bits. So it's always amazing to watch her work. So I felt like, that's just one of my favorites. And then another one for me was Cinema Paradiso, and that's an old Italian film, if you haven't heard of it. It's basically about a young boy growing up in a village much like where my dad grew up, and they have a single movie theater, and the priest would come in and review the films, and he would ring a little bell for the parts that needed to be spliced out of the official public screening of the movie, taking out any of the kisses and stuff like that. And so this little boy forms a friendship with the guy who runs this movie theater. And it's just such a special, beautifully shot, understated performances. And I saw it at about the age of eight. It was the first film I can remember seeing apart from the first film that my dad took me to, which was Asterix and Obelix, the cartoon, at five. And this was the first film with substance that I saw, when I was about eight. And it blew me away, and I was bawling by the end of it. And I've never forgotten it. So,
yeah, no, that's Cinema Paradiso.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember when I'm older than you, so I saw it on a date. And towards the end, when I was holding back to tears, my date was like, ooh, I can tell you were touched there. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. Just a little bit. Yep.
Yeah. I know if I seem like I'm going to cry, you'll still kiss me later. But if I totally bawled, it probably isn't going
to
happen.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I know. It was an amazing. Yeah. And also, I don't know, I think a lot of my films do tend to sort of touch on grief or the life transitions of when the people you love come in and come out. And so that film, it makes sense when I think about it, that was one of the major moments that I went, wow, I'd really like to do that one day, be able to tell a story like that.
Yeah, fantastic.
And the other one, Big Fish. I just love that film. It's Tim Burton.
By the way, all three, I love all three. When you said Eternal Sunshine, I put my hand on my chest and went, ah. it's a great. And then, yeah, Big Fish, I think, might be Tim Burton's greatest thing that the public has missed.
I agree. Oh, it was really in the underrated.
I cried like a baby at that film.
It's just so beautiful. And it deals with that difficult relationship of when you grow up, your relationship to your parents, that push-pull of wanting to be your own person, but also loving them and finding them difficult and respecting them, but also like, come on, can you just like get with the times, or can you just see me as something other than the extension of yourself? Like, just all of that was just so beautifully done in that film. And then the fantasy for me, I just,
yeah,
again,
the way
he's amazing at practical, right? Like practical fantasy. Like, how do you make it feel fantastical when it's the real world still, you know?
Yeah. And such a mature film. I mean, you know, I love all the stuff he does for families. Love, yeah. Love. In fact, now I'm blanking, but the Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children is one we watch repeatedly. And I watch it. I'm like, how come this wasn't nominated for Best Picture?
Yeah.
Like it's such a better film than the stuff that are made just for adults. But
right. He does. He really brings, he doesn't shy away from things either. When you look at that, there's some really dark themes in there. But, like, he's trusting the kids and the audience to resonate with the bigger things as well. You know,
absolutely.
Just not dumbing it down.
Yeah, no, he's, I mean, it seems like he gets to do whatever he wants to do, but I still feel like he's not really acknowledged for the genius. Yeah. You know, he's up there with Nolan and everybody.
Yeah.
You know, everybody.
Yeah,
he kicks ass.
Yeah. He does. He does. And then the one I'm not supposed to mention but will is The Fellowship from Lord of the Rings, because The Lord of the Rings came about when I was just like, I remember Peter Jackson announcing on our news, like there's only two news stations in New Zealand. There was when I was coming up to sort of college years, and he was announcing that he was doing it. He was bringing this huge production. He's bringing this finance to our country and was going to make these huge fantasy films in New Zealand. And the national pride that went into those films just was so inspiring. And knowing that he'd come from like heavenly creatures to come to and before that bad
and the
taste.
Horror films
and the horror films Bad Taste and all the others, like to because he was a person who started off just making films with his newspaper money and the camera his parents like scrimped together to give him, and building his claymation in his own oven. You know, like he was doing it with his mates, and then his love for it, like his mastery just developed through trial and error and through watching like so many films. He's like a total cinephile. And so, you know, I found his story so inspiring as a Kiwi to see someone do it, like create a real name for himself.
Specifically, you're calling out The Fellowship, the first film.
Yeah, I mean, I love the whole trilogy, and I you know, pull it out whenever I need inspiration as well. But the first one particularly was amazing. Just the way he created so seamlessly all these worlds and characters and brought them to life from such a tricky, such a hard thing to do, bringing something that's such a well-loved book and so many people know and have their opinion on.
And that had been there had been stabs at it too,
right? And you know, that's part of the territory in a way. When you want to tell such a grand story that has become part of like the whole, like many generations of people's imagination, it's going to be tough at times. I think like that's pretty much an impossible task. But I think that they did a really good job of staying true to their own vision in the way that Fran and he and the other people who are collaborating did it.
Oh, yeah, it's a huge achievement. I was one of the people who I understood they weren't going to give him Best Picture till the third one, but I think he just should have gotten it three times.
But, you know, the third one for me, I don't love it as much as the first two.
Funny, because my favorite is Twin Towers, the Two Towers.
Yeah, that was amazing, too.
For me, that one might be. But I think the third is, it's really the book's fault that the ending ends.
Right?
Because it just doesn't cut off. If he had ended it half an hour or 45 minutes earlier and left us super happy, he wouldn't have been true to the book, right? So,
yeah.
I don't know. But I say that based on hearsay because I didn't read the books.
I had a lot of trouble ever getting through them all the way. They didn't work for me personally. It's just the language is so dense.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think I would read it now. I mean, I tried to read it back in – I used to read a lot of fantasy, but I read more modern, like Anne McCaffrey and things like that through my teenage years. And when I tried Lord of the Rings, it was too much for me.
So question number two is an underrated film.
Okay, cool. So The Price of Milk is a Kiwi film made in 2000, and it's this delicious, quirky little rom-com starring a young Carl Urban and a young Danielle McCormack. And it is amazing, and a distributor bought the rights, hardly released any DVDs, and you cannot get it almost anywhere. So that's waving a red flag and saying, if anyone can find this, let me know because I really want to watch it again. And it's like really weird, and it has a little like – so it's about this farmer's wife who basically feels like she – the love has fallen out of her relationship because she has to compete with the love of her husband's love of his cows, his herd of cows. She feels like he loves them more than her, and like she's going through this thing about questioning, and they kind of go through this reawakening of their relationship, and this like this amazing scene where they fall kissing into a vat of milk, and there's another one where she's running down this rolling green, like very New Zealand rolling green field, and she's in this red sari with this red scarf like billowing behind her as she runs down this hill. It's really odd and beautiful, and you know, it's a cool film. And there was even a little touch of the fairies in there. Like it was this weird little moment, like one little scene and then it was gone again. So yeah. And then there's one other one that I wanted to mention, also a Kiwi film called Black Sheep. And it's hilariously bad. It's basically Tucker and Dale versus Evil style horror comedy and schlock comedy, and it's so funny. It has radioactive sheep that go on this rampage eating through a small town as they try to contain it, and it's a wonderful film. And I saw it, there was hardly anyone in the theater, there was like one person and then me and my husband, and we are crying with tears streaming down our faces, and this other person is stoically silent, and to this day we don't know whether they meant to be in that cinema because they were not reacting as if they knew what they were going in for when they started watching. So, yeah.
How funny. Well, I'll see if I can locate The Price of Milk.
Yeah.
If I find it, I'll share it.
Thank you.
I'm very anti-torrent, but when the powers that be don't give me a way to get something,
yeah,
we do have an old laptop that I have torrent installed on, and I'm like, well, if there is no way to get it, then I'll torrent it.
Well, it's really sad when like a good film basically just falls out. In today's world, it's harder to do, but like then, you know, there wasn't the facility.
Yeah. Question number three is saying an overrated film. It doesn't mean it's bad. It doesn't even mean you don't like it. Maybe you do like it.
Yeah. I have two on that one too. Wolf Creek was an Australian horror that just blew up. Everyone thought it was incredible. And I went into that cinema and literally within 15 minutes I had to walk out. There were so many reasons that I wanted to see it. One of which was that an old TV show called Play School, which is for little kids, kind of like Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood was based on an original show with Mr. Robinson or Mr. Robbins or something like that. Anyway, it's kind of in that vein of Sesame Street and things like that. And the guy who was playing the lead psycho killer, serial killer, was a play school person. So I grew up watching him do play school. And so I was like, I really want to see this guy recreate himself as an actor. But the film itself, I just could not sit through. It was just so gruesome, and it really placed the audience inside of the trauma. and made you feel, yeah. And for me, I just couldn't live with being that far inside of the trauma of being captured by a serial killer. It just couldn't sit there. So, and that did really well internationally and people love it and it gets cited a lot. But for me, I was like, I don't think we need to be that violent with our audience. I feel like we're entrusted with our audience's well-being as a filmmaker. And I feel like sometimes people revel in destroying their audience. And
sure. I like how New Zealand oriented your list is.
Yeah, that one was Australian, but yeah,
Australian,
from
yeah.
Down Under. At the time, I felt like, yeah, I know. I've got lots of like international ones inside of like when I was thinking, what are my favorites of all time? I've got like a lot of like different ones as well, but it was just funny. And then No Country for Old Men was the other overrated one for me. Again, it was the Coen brothers, my favorite thing that they've done is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? I can see that they are masters like of the craft. I respect them greatly, but I just don't enjoy the desolation and the lack, like the cynicism about humanity in their work, and particularly in that one. I just found it so – I just came out of the cinema angry. And with nowhere to go with it, nothing I could do about it.
I have no issue with that. I actually do think that's their. Yeah, I don't like that film, and I'm actually a fan of theirs. I love Miller's Crossing. That might be my favorite, but I love when they do comedy like Raising Arizona and Big Lebowski.
Yeah,
but yeah, when they yeah. Honestly, No Country for Old Men. I was pissed when it won out over There Will Be Blood, which I thought was like one of the most beautiful films I'd seen. I love that film, although that's dark too. But I
yeah,
just thought,
and it's funny because there are films that I love that are dark, but like Donnie Darko, I basically walked out of viewing that and had to lie on the grass. I was shaking and crying so much. And I don't, to this day, don't really know why it touched me that much, but so there are films that I enjoy that shake me up. So it's not necessarily just being shaken up. I feel like it's the underlying attitude of the filmmaker to the audience, I guess, in both of those that felt like my humanity was being disregarded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the last one, and it's funny because this question you've probably covered times five for me.
is something
yeah, something lesser known that people should seek out. I mean, obviously I'll seek out The Price of Milk, but
yeah, there's one other one that I want you to look for if you haven't seen it. It's called Le Fate Ignoranti, and it's an Italian film made in 2001, and it is this incredible film. I'm just gonna grab it on IMDb, but in English, it's called His Secret Life, and it's about this widow who discovers on the death of her husband, after the death of her husband, that he had a whole other life where he was in love with a man who turns out, and she goes in search of this other life that he was living with his lover, and she finds out that lover is on his deathbed with terminal AIDS, sorry, I think, that he's and she basically befriends and gets to know, like, she tries to basically find out who her husband was, the parts of him that she didn't know he was hiding in his life. She sort of, yeah, forms this incredible friendship with this ex-lover of her ex-husband. And it's a really beautiful film. the director is Ferzan Özpetek. I find it really hard to say his name, but he's amazing. And he's dealt a lot with, a lot of his films deal with how does the Italian culture particularly, how is it starting to cope in the modern times with gay rights coming out much more now inside of like a culture that has been quite anti-gay rights for many years because of the Catholic kind of Roman Catholic influence.
Very much, yeah.
So he deals with that question in families and in communities of friends and stuff really beautifully.
Cool. You know, I was going to throw in just to chat with you about it because of the New Zealand connection, a film I love that I watched again over this 3-day weekend is What We Do in the Shadows.
I know. So I love Taika Waititi.
So great, isn't he?
He's so great. And I love seeing his trajectory. Like when you watch through his films, the way you see his voice clarifying and becoming bolder, like to the point where he did, the latest Thor.
I know. I didn't see Thor. It's and everyone so tells him. Me it's a good Thor. It's a good, so everyone him. Says it's like the only good superhero movie in a long time, but I didn't see it because I actually wasn't. It's funny because I fell in love with Hunt for the Wilder People.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I thought that was the best. I was telling everybody that it should have been nominated and it should have won. It was the best film of the year by far.
It's a great film. I agree.
And I saw it because it was playing on a cruise ship.
Yeah. I got to see it in the end in a plane because that was the only time I got to see it.
Yeah.
The kids were sleeping.
And my God. And so that made me go, okay, I've got to watch everything he does because that film's so great. And oh my God, I just rewatched What We Do in the Shadows.
So fantastic. And they're just having such a so funny. Good time. And
that little, just the smile on his face as the dandy vampire. Oh.
Yeah. I just feel like he's a filmmaker that, like, knows how to have a great time with his friends as he's making a film, and it comes through in the film. Like someone was saying, he's the only director they've ever met who, when he calls Martini, he's got Martini in his hand on set. And I'm like, that just sounds so like him. And did you see Boy? That was one of his
earlier films. No, in fact, that's one of the ones. Now yeah. I'm trying to make a point of cat. You know, it's funny because this is so embarrassing. I saw Eagle versus Shark in a screening room at ICM.
Yeah.
And I hadn't even heard of him. I guess he was probably there and I didn't even meet him. I didn't. And I was kind of just, I didn't love that film. Like I loved
it. Yeah, it wasn't my favorite of him, but it does show that quirky humor.
Yeah, and like, it has that strong start, but he didn't know how to make it last for a feature, right? So it had a funny premise, and then it sort of fell apart. But yeah, I have to see. Yeah, okay, I got to get Boy.
Yeah, because Boy is like the younger child of the Hunt for the Wilder People. Like those two films, you can see the connection. And I feel like Eagle versus Shark, you can see the connection to What We Do in the Shadows. And then you can kind of get, when you've seen the canon, you can get how his version of a superhero movie is Thor because of watching those.
That was such a great list. I love it when these filmmakers bring up movies I saw a long time ago and almost completely forgot about. I mean, I saw Cinema Paradiso, or as Miri said, Cinema Paradiso, which kind of embarrassed me that she says it so well. Hey, her dad's from Italy. But she brings up Cinema Paradiso, which I saw in theaters in 1990 at age 22-ish. And I totally forgot what an amazing film that is. Maybe I should watch it again. As if I don't have enough movies to watch. And yeah, I totally love talking about Taika Waititi with her. I'm obsessed with that guy. You've got to see What We Do in the Shadows. It's hilarious. But I think that's all you need to hear from me. Go to discoverfilm.net to see Miri's film, to see a lot of other great short films, to get links to lots of great feature films. At discoverfilm.net, you can also get links to the Sherman Oaks Film Festival, which is in every November, and Film Invasion LA, which is coming up in June. And as always, thanks for listening.